Tesla has ordered an inquiry.
Barings is facing bankruptcy after one of its traders lost nearly £400 million on dealings in the Far East.
And Nick Leeson, you were the person who'd created this problem. Were you, as you were betting and betting and betting and losing and losing and losing, were you at the same time, was there part of you thinking, these people who are meant to be spotting these things are looking somewhere else? It's astonishing.
I expected, certainly within the next 24, 48 hours, to be exposed. And it's only over a period of time that you start to realise that the controls or the checks aren't that particularly good. And that, you know, strangely enough, gives you a form of confidence. I don't know if confidence is the right word, to continue to try and extract yourself from the situation, which is what I did.
Give us some idea of what a typical daily loss might be for you.
Look, they were horrendous. They were tens of million on a daily basis.
Towards
the end, it could have been bigger. It could have been 100 million.
What were your thoughts, if any, about the people who were going to lose money on this? I mean, people, individuals who'd invested.
It's not something that I consciously thought of at the time. I mean, I suppose I was very blinkered by attempting to extract myself from the situation. I mean, not once did I consider the outcome that the bank would collapse. I don't think I knew what the bank was worth.
And it does seem you also had a problem sharing this with anyone. You certainly didn't tell your wife, which was obviously very hurtful. You didn't take advice from anyone.
No, I didn't. And, you know, when I look back with the benefit of hindsight, you know, that's the most simple thing that I could have done. But, you know, I was 25 years old when I was working in Singapore, and I should have turned around and asked for help and advice, and I didn't. And if there is one single biggest regret and one piece of advice I can give to anybody, that would be it, to ask for help and advice.
Would you say Barings was well prepared for the brave new world in which it found itself?
No, with the benefit of hindsight.
John Gapper in New York.
Yes, I think Barings was a bank that was in a lot of transition at the time, which was probably one reason why Nick was able to get away with what he got away with for so long. And in a way, it's an astonishing story, really, of people not being able to see what was in front of their faces. I think there was a lot of rivalry within the bank between different factions. And what ended up happening was that Nick was able to devise this really rather clever fraud and keep it going for really much longer than anybody might have imagined, and I'm sure that he might have imagined.
And there was definitely a point when I was sort of daily ringing senior people in Barings, asking if there was any truth in the rumours that they had a very huge position in Singapore that was going wrong. No, absolutely not. And literally a matter of a couple of weeks beforehand, I was asked if Barings could draw down on a standby letter of credit. And that was one of Barclays' biggest losses, because on the strength of the absolute assurances at a time when Barings must have known things were going pear-shaped, Barclays effectively believed them.
But Andrew, on the face of the record, we didn't know. I mean, it's extraordinarily regrettable, but that happens to be true. At one end of it was a very, if I may say, Nick, a very resourceful and successful fraud, concealment of transactions. And at the other end was a system of controls which had been carefully designed, but which proved to be totally ineffective.
Just as a matter of fact, you and Peter Norris haven't actually seen each other before today, since you were sort of slapping each other on the back in Singapore many, many years ago. What's it like seeing Peter again?
No, I'm sure you didn't. No. It's fine. There was a little bit of trepidation this morning, but, you know, life moves on.
And for you, Peter?
No, it's absolutely fine.
You were being put on a pedestal by your colleagues. Did you accept that, or was there a modicum of guilt?
What happened for me, more from a personal perspective, is that everybody bought into the success story. And that's not just people within the bank, it's people who worked on the trading floor. It's my wife and family at home. And, you know, there was all these sort of status relationships that started that became too important for me. And, you know,
including the one with your wife, obviously.
Absolutely. And, you know, you've heard the comments there earlier, and they're embarrassing to hear. You know, I'll be honest about it. When I went to work in Singapore, I took a pay cut to go there, you know, because I wanted the opportunity. You know, I was a driven individual. I wanted success. And, you know, ultimately, I'm going to be remembered for my biggest failure. You know, that's embarrassing.
Do you buy that, Peter?
No, I do buy that, because he was seen as a very important part of a team of people in Japan and Singapore. This was never never presented as an operation on its own in Singapore. What it was presented as was a highly successful business trading between exchanges in Japan and Singapore. And Nick was seen as the most important person in that business in Singapore.
Getting big bonuses as a reward.
And others were seen as equally important in Osaka and Tokyo.
And what were the bonuses?
The big bonuses, 150?
I don't think I ever got that much, but
right,
I think I got a year, 1 year, and 3 years.
Which would
years.
Have been what?
100% of salary.
100% of salary. So it probably would have been 50,000 in the first year. And then I think there might have been a figure approaching 100 in the second year.
I'd be aware for most of the audience, so even those sorts of numbers sound outlandish. Yeah. But in the standards of the industry, they were not extraordinary. I'm sure from Nick's point of view, this wasn't an attempt to get paid a lot of money.
Is that how you saw it, Nicholas?
I think Nick's ego got the better of him. I think once you go down this path, it's very difficult to backtrack. And I think that ego comes into it.
It was here on Singapore's frenetic money exchange that Nick Leeson followed his trader's instincts in an audacious bid to manipulate the markets. And it was here that he ran up debts of nearly £1 billion, which ultimately broke the bank.
This was a dramatic time for you, Nick, because the game was up and you came back to Europe via Frankfurt. And I can remember, and probably people around the table can remember, the first picture we saw of you, you'd come off the plane and you had your baseball cap on back to front and you were grinning.
More from walking into an environment that I didn't understand. I think sometimes, you know, when you are confronted with those sort of situations, you get some odd, quirky facial representations, and that was certainly the case. I hate that picture, but it was the beginning of the end, I suppose.
What did the first picture of Nick in the media do to you, Peter Norris?
I think I wanted to punch your lights out. At the time,
I wouldn't have blamed you, Peter, to be honest.
Alan Bloom, as one of the three administrators, you actually had a meeting with Peter Baring, which must have been quite dramatic and very painful for him.
Well, it was. You felt that you were. This was a historic moment. I mean, literally, an historic moment. You got the sense in that room of this is the man who has had to file for bankruptcy, a business that has been in his family's hands one way or the other for several hundred years.
Nicholas Edwards, looking at Nick Leeson now, and I don't know how long it is since you've seen him.
Some time.
What are your feelings about him?
Well, I'm very experienced with working in the markets over the last 33 years or so, and Nick was clearly struck by the elements of greed and fear over a number of years. I'm sure he's full of remorse. He certainly gives the impression he is. That won't change things going back. Am I sympathetic? No, I'm not sympathetic, because he's cost a lot of people their livelihoods, their pensions, their family fortunes, etc. Do I have some empathy with his situation now? I just think he's in a difficult place. What else can he say?
Yeah, I spent 9 months in prison in Germany before I was extradited back to Singapore.
And then you went into a very high security jail.
Yeah, it was, the conditions were extremely basic. It was obviously very hot because it was Singapore. Everybody is a triad gang member. I spent 4.5 years, or the best part of, looking back at things that had happened and, you know, thinking of ways that I could have reacted differently, ways that I could have made different decisions. And, you know, hopefully that makes me a slightly different person going forward. I'd offer an apology to Peter, because, you know, I do realise how heartfelt that was. But whether an apology is going to make much difference to Peter at this stage, I just don't know. I don't know if it's hollow. As I said to you at the time and at the beginning, you know, in telling you what it means to me, you know, it is definitely the most embarrassing period of my life.
Embarrassing, Peter.
Well, I can completely understand that. And Nick, thank you very much for your apology.
Clearly, the only person who did anything criminal was me. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I know the media like to, and certainly at the time, they ran stories about there being some collusion with certain individuals and, you know, other people being aware of what's going on. That's absolutely not the case. You know, I don't know how I did it, and I know John spoke about this earlier. but I did keep it all to myself right up until the last day.